Come on down and meet everybody and hear us singing. There's nothing better than being together when we're singing.
Five of us and Mom working all day. We knew she could help her if our music would pay. Daddy got through this Sherlock song, and it really came together when Mom sang along.
Come on now and meet everybody and hear us singing. There's nothing better than being together.
You've been listening to the lies that Satan put into your head. So scared and isolated, you're too tired to pray. You've been wishing that somebody'd come and take the fear away. You don't know how it happened, but you feel like God forgot. But God is saying, child, I am not.
Let me do a transfer. Can I put you transfer and get on another phone real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
Thanks very much.
Talking with Rick Siegel. He'll be with us in just a minute. He began acting at the age of 4 when he was cast as little Ricky Stevens on The Partridge Family. And right now he's actually a licensed minister. So we're going to talk to Rick Siegel in just a minute about his life right here on PNPnetwork.com, the Internet's entertainment superstation. And of course, if you haven't heard the Entertainment Minute yet, check out a station near you. Just go to PNPnetwork.com for a list of the 95 stations in 38 states that carry this particular program. And we'll be talking with Rick in just a moment. As we opened
Thank
the show, you heard the theme song from The Partridge Family, and also heard a song from Rick's brand new CD. It's called Time to Dance. Time to Dance. I'm not sure if it's brand new to him, but it is to me, because I hadn't heard it before. Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I actually love the CD.
Oh, thanks.
I think it's wonderful when you can spread a positive message in music rather than a negative one.
I agree with you.
It seems like too many of the kids nowadays are influenced by some of the negatives they hear in rap and other music.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is true.
So tell us, first of all, I want to go back in time a little bit.
Okay.
How did you get cast when you were age 4 on The Partridge Family?
Well, I had both my parents at the time, who were both young when they had me, they were singing together in New York and had gotten the opportunity to go to Nashville and do a demo there. And while they were in the studio, I was about 3 at that time, they took opportunity with me. I had told them from about the age of 2, so they tell me that I wanted to sing with them wherever they went. So if they were in the studio, I wanted to be in there singing with them too. And they recorded some stuff that I did singing in there with my mom and my dad. And I don't know who it was in Nashville that heard me singing, but somebody heard me and sent a tape to Rene Valente, who that time was the person who heard it and decided to have me come out and screen test for The Partridge Family. And that's how that happened. I remember my dad asking me when we were in Nashville, saying, how would you like to go to California? And all I knew was Disneyland was in California.
Well, I mean, was it hard work? I mean, when you're 4 years old, was it hard work to do, or was it more fun?
My recollection is more fun, because that's all I wanted to do was sing and be on stage with my mom and dad, and it just was a very felt natural thing for me to do. And though I don't have a lot of memory of it, because you only remember snapshots from 4 years old. It was fun. It wasn't work.
Now, do you remember you came in the show after the cast was already there and
correct
knew each other and stuff? Were they warm greetings to you, or how'd you get along with the kids in the cast?
All of my recollection of that was very positive. Very well received. I remember just fun. There's a lot of people have asked me before, do you remember anything that was negative about that time? And if there was anything negative, I have no recollection of it at all.
Who was the closest in age to you at that time?
Golly, probably two youngest.
The little girls?
Yeah. They were probably the closest to me in age.
Now, do you ever talk to any of these guys from the cast?
No, the last person I had contact with was Danny Bonaducci. I actually saw, he had a TV show when he was living in Chicago, and he had a Partridge Family reunion that had everybody there on set except for David and Susan. And that was the first time I had seen everybody since the Partridge Family days except for David. I had seen David a couple times, just in a restaurant, nothing entertainment industry-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny's the last person I had contact with because of doing that reunion, which was, I think, back in 96 or 97.
Now, for instance, when you if you ran into David Cassidy in a restaurant, would he say, hey, Rick, how you doing? Or?
It probably now. It was when I saw him. I hadn't seen him in so long. It was back in, I think, about 1990, and I saw him and said, David, you're not going to probably recognize me right now, but I'm Ricky Siegel. And he immediately, when I said that, he said, oh, my goodness, hi, and he asked how my mom and dad were doing, and, you know, but at first glance, then, I don't know if he recognized me. He might now if he saw me. I wouldn't assume it. I'd go up to him and say, David, hey, that's Ricky Siegel again. And but he may if he saw me.
Now, you really, after that show, did you do TV after that?
Yeah, I did. Nothing that was as quote-unquote high profile.
Yeah.
The next, I think the most recognizable thing that I would have done would have been either, I was one of the Don Crichton dancers on the Tim Conway show. He had a sitcom that was very similar in format to the Carol Burnett show that he did for a lot of years.
Mm.
He had that show for two seasons, and I was one of the Don Crichton dancers, who was a troupe of kid dancers. And then I did a small part in the movie Oh God, Book 2.
Hmm.
So
did you work with George Burns from that?
Yeah. Well, I didn't. He was on the set the same day I was. I never had any dialogue with him. He was there. And
was John Denver in that film, too?
No, he was in the first one.
Ah.
The second one was with the little girl and her friend, and writing Thank God on the walls around school. And I did some other things that were smaller, you know, small guest appearances on things like A Little House on the Prairie and other things like that through my childhood, but nothing that had the same type of notoriety as Partridge Family.
I find it interesting, though, that you just mentioned the religious aspect there.
Hmm.
Because you've come back to it again, full cycle.
It's very interesting from my subjective vantage point to see what the Lord's done from just back in New York and even before I was born up to now. It's very interesting.
Did you have any of the time that all these other kids had when they were teenagers or early 20s and you know, they had been child stars and had a real, real big hard time dealing with the not being a star anymore?
Yeah, not in the same dimension that I've seen a lot of other, what you would say, contemporaries that you've seen stories they did, where are they now, and they had problems with the, you know, got arrested and drug problems and legal problems with family. And though I did have times that were very personally tumultuous, it was nothing that had a tabloid attention. And as far as the desire of having that, it was something I had expected would happen again. So even though I had missed it and wanted it, I didn't have this sense of bitterness that it wasn't there. I had actually an expectation that, well, it happened once, it'll happen again.
Yeah. It's interesting. I guess you stayed in music, I mean, because you've been doing music since you were a kid.
Yeah.
You play piano, you write music. This CD that I have in my hands, A Time to Dance, mm-hmm. This is on your own label?
Yeah. It actually, when we first started to record something, we didn't set out to actually do a full album. We just wanted to do some kind of a demo, because I felt like the Lord's been giving me songs. I feel like there was something I wanted to just get down and show people and see if there were any doors that would open up. And my friend Sky, who produced the CD, we recorded it, and it was evident while we were recording it that we were going to do more songs, and it became an album. And we just did it independently. I did send it to several different places that had the capacity to, you know, sign you to a particular label, not so much because I wanted to pursue that in and of itself, but I just wanted to see what doors were going to open up. And the actual style of the album was surprising to me, because the very first song on there, which is He's Always There, is a lot more along the line of the stylistic.
It's a great song. In fact, we just played a clip of it a few minutes ago.
Oh, good.
And it's great. In fact, I want to tell people where they can get this too, because I think the music is really good. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, Bob Carlyle with the Butterfly Kisses, and we've had Point of Grace on the show, and a lot of these folks who have really crossed over into mainstream. And some of this, I think, is stuff that could cross over with the proper airplay.
Yeah, and that's my something. It was interesting what happened in the context of it, without waxing long and in recording the album. There was a real clarification for me in making this CD and what I'm supposed to do specifically with my music. I had really thought, because of the style of the music, and it was very youth-oriented and very high energy, I started thinking along the lines of contemporary Christianity and groups that you think of, like DC Talk or Michael W. Smith and the two that you had mentioned, and Stephen Curtis Chapman. And I was thinking, well, maybe that's the direction that we're supposed to go with this. And the Lord really just stopped me in my tracks as I was thinking about radio stations and things of that nature, and said, "You're a worship leader. Stop thinking about yourself like a rock star." And that struck me on a personal level, not because there's anything wrong at all with contemporary Christian music and the people that I named. I believe they are called to do what they're doing, and I have no qualms about that at all. I don't wish to communicate anything negative in that regard. But for me, like He's Always There, that first song, my writing style is far more within there. And that doesn't say I'm not going to write more like the other songs. But I, as much as I would like to see, golly, I'd like to see the songs on that CD go everywhere and anywhere. But I'm not as geared as I used to be about, okay, let's accentuate the contemporary Christian music market and get this on airplay and get the CDs in stores, as I am now, of just saying, you know, my sole interest in writing this is focused on leading people in worship.
Conversely, as a licensed minister and a worship leader, obviously if this thing got picked up and played everywhere and people bought it, then the message gets out to more and more people.
Absolutely. And see, that's something I'm not, if that is something that takes place, I would love to see that happen. And I have a sense inside of myself that that is what the Lord would do. But I'm not as, my focus had shifted a little bit without even realizing it. I became a little bit more focused upon, I guess a business aspect of it, which I don't negate. But I was too focused on that and thought, you know, I need to get back to the basics of why I even started writing this. So I got caught up in, you know, the pushing, so to speak, of the album, even though I was never really pushing it. Does that make sense?
No, it does.
Yeah.
I want to ask you something that's in your bio. It said your goal was to use your gift as an actor and singer-songwriter to wake people up spiritually and, quote, to get them off the crutch of Christianity. What do you mean by that?
Well, I believed that from a psychology course I had taken at a college and things that I had been exposed to the New Age community. Though I didn't have a lot of friends in the New Age community, I was exposed to a lot of New Age teaching and embraced it wholeheartedly.
The Deepak Chopra type of thing?
I'm sorry?
The Deepak Chopra type
thing? Yeah, I guess similar. I know him. I'm not very familiar with his teachings, but the things I've heard him are very much along that same line, which is you know, it's a quasi-Hinduism.
It's Far Eastern stuff.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And the crutch of Christianity, what I saw was, particularly in the realm I'm in now as a minister, for born-again Christians who raised their hands in church and had, you know, ministries like Benny Hinn and Oral Roberts, what I thought I saw was manipulation that had started with the Roman Catholic Church and taking what was originally intended to be a good message and politicized it to control the masses. And my feeling was that's where Christianity was, and it was time to let people know that they didn't have to be controlled by a mass populace, but that there was a real spiritual realm.
You know, it's interesting to note, Rick, that Jesse Ventura said something very similar to that and was racked by the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's where I was. I was very much in I believed very much that you create your own reality, that spirituality is subjective, and that there are no definitive truths. accept that there is something other than what's going on physically.
Mm.
So that was my goal, was to really I felt it would be liberating people to get them out of a religious system into a freedom of a kind of an otherworldly spirituality.
If you're listening and just tuned in, we're talking to the minister, Rick Siegel, formerly known as Ricky Stevens, the little guy on the Partridge Family. You know, one thing also that struck me here, and I don't want to get too into religion here because it's a non-sectarian program.
Certainly.
But it says in your bio that on September 28, 1992, at the age of 23, you met and gave your life to Jesus Christ. How did that happen?
I had been speaking with a person who was a born-again Christian, who was in the theater group I was in, called Trinity. And we started talking about things spiritually, and that was always something I would do immediately, and I recognized that she had very biblical beliefs, and I had said a lot of derogatory things about the Bible and about Christianity, and I had never read the Bible cover to cover. And so I asked her if I could borrow her Bible, because I didn't have one, with the intent that I would read it from cover to cover, and thereby have the tools to say, look, I can say this about the Bible. I've read it from cover to cover. And since I had learned in my philosophy course that there were contradictions, I was going to point them out to her and really help her out. Well, I didn't find the contradictions that I thought were there, and did some research other than just opening it and taking a text wherever I wanted it from. And it was in the middle of reading that something inside of my spirit started to actually get pretty scared, because I thought I had the truth. And when you've got the truth and you're setting sails, and all of a sudden something comes in and says, this may not be the right way to go, it was concerning to me. And 3 days later was September 28th of 1992. It was 3 days after I started reading the Bible from cover to cover that I was saved.
And for folks who want to get this CD, they might have heard the beginning of He's Always There on the beginning of the show. How can they get it?
Well, the easiest way right now is to go to Amazon.com. It is available there, and you just go under the music section, and you can either put in my name or you can put in the album A Time to Dance, and it'll come up there.
And it's Rick Siegel, S-E-G-A-L-L, folks.
Yeah, S-E-G-A-L-L.
Do you have a website, too?
Not yet. I have got ricksiegel.com, but I don't have anything up there right now. So there's really nothing to go to other than Amazon.com to get it, because it's not in any other stores right now.
I'd suggest you get yours up as quickly as you can and take advantage, because your name is on the Internet in quite a few areas because of the Partridge Family.
Yeah.
So it'd be good if they could link it over to a new site that you have, you know?
Yeah, and I do plan on doing that, and we did secure the name. We just don't have the website up yet.
Yeah, yeah. And you and your wife, Andrea, have been married for, what, about 5 years?
Yeah, since 1995.
And have two little ones.
Yes.
That's
Ashley
cool.
And Alexis.
Yeah, I have two little ones myself, and they're a lot of fun, aren't they?
Oh, fantastic.
Two little girls, though, huh?
Yes,
two little
girls.
Have bathroom fights and and little girls.
That's right. And they were both born on the same day.
Oh, my.
They were both born on July 20th.
Wow.
So they get, it'll be interesting to see when birthday time comes around. Hopefully they will love the fact that they were born on the same day.
Well,
but
I don't know about that, because then they're going to have to share the birthday.
That's right. Well, we'll make it special. They'll have their own separate little things and a joint thing, too. So.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Rick, and obviously you've got it together, and not one of those child actors that ended up bad, and that's good. And hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime, and maybe when the website comes back on, we'll touch base again.
Yeah, that would be nice. I appreciate it.
Hi, Rick. Take care.
Thanks for your time.
So, Rick Siegel, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.